I have a theory about Thor Ragnarok.
All right, let's hear it.
Stop. Roll it back. I have a Thory. I apologize for missing out the first time. So apparently there are big cosmic revelations in Thor Ragnarok. And I'm going to tell you exactly what's going to happen right now. I should mark this a spoiler. I don't have any inside information, but I know this is what it is. You've got Thor and Hulk.
Yep.
Here's my Thory. You've got Thor and Hulk, right? They are the two most powerful characters. By necessity, they were left out of Civil War because, you know, what do you do? There's no way you can have those guys fight. They'd destroy all of the entire Earth. It'd be a civil war of the North and the South hemispheres floating away from each other in space. So you put them on a fun time, good time in Asgard or wherever they end up going.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're going to run into Thanos. It's supposed to be a world-hopping adventure. This is how we introduce Thanos. We are not too far away. The clock is running.
Well, that's true.
We have to set up Infinity War. This purple guy's got to do more than sit and watch the game or whatever he's doing on that chair / toilet or whatever it is.
Could be both.
Yeah, it's got a cooler on the bottom, too. That's the neat part. And so they're going to run into him like at the end of the film, and he's going to kick the crap out of them.
Sure.
And that's going to set us up. It, you know, it might be in the post-credit sequence or something like that. You know, they're like, we did it. To the witch, use it. And then, like, we'll come back after the credits, and then he'll just come out and kick the crap out of them. And we know we're in trouble. Something else. We know that this is going to feature Hela, the god of the Norse underworld, played by Cate Blanchett.
Mm-hmm.
She's death. What are we going to do? Are we going to do some other third-party entity that is going to be the specter of death in the Marvel Universe that Thanos is in love with? No. We're going to do like we've always done. We're going to make Ego the living planet Star-Lord's father instead of some Jason, some other guy that we don't want to even deal with.
Right.
Yes, Cate Blanchett as Hela is going to be death. It'll turn out that she is death to the Norse, but she is the aspect of death for everybody. Marvel's, you know, girl with the ankh, if you will.
Sure.
Only with a, you know, evil, mean bent. And she's going to be the one that Josh Brolin is going to fall in love with Cate Blanchett, and that's how we're going to do this thing. That way you've got stakes. It isn't like Thor has to show up in your comic. You're Nova, and you're fighting, you know, along with Star-Lord against Thanos or whatever, and we've got to get Thor in there somehow. No, he's already tied in because she is going to team up with Thanos to destroy the universe. The Avengers have to be there because they don't want the universe to be destroyed. Neither does Peter Quill because he's one of the idiots who live in it.
Right.
And Thor's got a personal stake because Hela is part of the family or whatever, and so we're all boom, boom, ready to go. Where does Captain Marvel fit? She doesn't. She just doesn't at all. And so
they're trying to jam her in here.
And hope the movie's good.
At the last second.
Absolutely nobody knows if it will be good or not. Movies is something we're going to talk about quite a bit today. So if you don't like movies, jump off now. But you're on the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mika Hanna.
No news! I mean, there's clearly news. There is clearly news in this world of ours. There's just no time to talk about any news. I want to talk about the fact that Quentin Tarantino is going to retire after his next two movies. That's what he said.
I don't believe it.
And I want to talk about the fact that they postponed the Dark Tower movie until summer.
Okay.
And also Jumanji is moving to Christmas. I want to talk about stuff like that. I want to talk about how J. Scott Campbell has crafted a new Riri Williams, that is Ironheart cover, in order to apologize for his insulting cover that was pulled. These are the things I want to talk about.
Some other time.
We can't.
No.
We do. No, we never can. Things come up once and they go either in the hopper or on the table. Are we eating tennis balls?
I'm not sure what's happening right now.
Lots of things can be a hopper. Anything that's just setting something up for other people to...
to take down?
Sure. With their mouths.
What Isn't have it, you.
A pitching machine has a... No, well, it depends if it's like the wheel kind. Or like a tennis ball. Things that shoot two tennis balls?
Yeah.
That's got a hopper, right?
I don't know. Let's say yes. Sports ball. Whee! Mikan Hanna knows nothing of this.
Yes. The Chicago guys won the sports ball.
Hey.
Can't talk about it. That's news. So we're going to move on and we're going to talk about films today. Specifically, we're talking about Doctor Strange.
Obviously.
We have our review of the film, Doctor Strange, Marvel's film starring I'm going to say his real name. He deserves it. Benedict Cumberbatch, who can't say Penguin, right? And so we've seen that. We're also going to talk about, for our comic book club, an abbreviated comic book club segment where we talk about Doctor Strange comic books. We're reviewing Strange and Strange. Ain't that strange?
Yeah.
But not Jonathan Strange and Mr. Bing Bong or whatever those books are called. There's a TV version of that.
Okay.
Mr. Norrell and Jonathan Strange?
I have no idea. I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay, you better take my word for it.
What is the comic that we're, the series that we're talking about? It's like
Marvel Premiere.
Yes.
Issues 9 through 14.
All right.
Yep. I know you just asked me that, so you can look it up on your computer and be ready.
I did.
But you're already ready because you've read it. So we'll be talking about some old-time Steve Englehart, Doctor Strange comics. We'll also be talking about a television show, stepping off the movie path. But it's a show that's a lot like horror movies, and it's based on a love of horror movies. It's Dana Gould's Stand Against Evil. I said stand, I think. Just reflexively, but that's the pun. That's the pun that we're working with here. It's actually called Stan Against Evil. It stars John C. McGinley. We'll have a quick review of that, and we'll talk about two trailers as well. The Wonder Woman trailer has come out. This is again, I don't know how they do trailers. This is the real trailer. The previous one was a teaser trailer,
even though
you see quite a bit.
Or
in
the
both
second
of them.
Trailer.
Yeah, the second trailer. We'll say the official trailer. I think it's called on YouTube. And also, we are talking about the T2 trailer. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, no, not that
T2. No, not that one. Trainspotting.
But
Trainspotting,
that's definitely
too.
What they want to inflect.
Can you not call a movie porno?
No.
You would ruin Google searches for it forever.
Absolutely.
So instead they decided to get cute. Now, I don't know anything about actual Trainspotting, like the practice of Trainspotting.
Uh-huh.
You're pretending to know what that is?
Like, are you talking about doing drugs? And what? I don't know what you're talking about. Exactly.
Trainspotting
I've
is
seen
a hobby
the movie a long time
where
ago.
You either live by train tracks or you go to them and you write down the numbers of the cars.
Oh, okay.
So they used to do this. It'd be easier now, I suppose. There's probably Trainspotting. In fact, I'm sure there's Trainspotting apps. And so you write down the number of the car, and oh, there's a car. Ooh, write that one. Ooh, write that down. And then you can check and see, oh, I've seen that car before. That's it!
That's real exciting.
It's kind of like stamp collecting. But the idea is that Trainspotting as a slang term has become doing something useless and wasting your time.
Gotcha.
Which is what these guys are doing with their lives.
Absolutely.
After 20 years. And we'll talk about that when we talk about the trailer. Very briefly, can you tell me how you feel about something, anything?
overwhelmed with nerdy things.
All right. Pop a few of those antipsychotics and let's do this thing.
Okay.
I know you feel some way. We just walked out of the Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
Yes, we did. We saw Space Seed before that, which is the original episode where makes his debut.
Khan, that is Ricardo Montalban, is totally in brown face and no one says boo.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I think it's kind of like if we give him this one, then we got to give Mickey Rooney an out for Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Do we?
It's kind of under the wire, though. It's kind of like the statute of limitations has run out because he created like this super awesome character.
Right.
That has spawned so much other stuff. And maybe it's two wrongs make a right because they whitewashed him when Bisquick Sizzlesnatch played him in Into Darkness. He is supposed to be an Indian.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Well, now he's doing wrong, so I can mess up his name.
All right.
He's supposed to be an Indian man.
Yes.
An East Indian man. He's
that's
a Sikh.
That's how they describe him
right.
in and the original
Well, that's
Trek
how they
episode.
Paint him in the original episode.
Yes.
I mean, at least, Ricardo is European. I mean, we're getting close, but
I guess.
They took a human biscuit, a human saltine, and no, you're Khan.
Yeah, I know.
At least he's got a sense of humor. I saw an interview with him, and these poor people, you know, they have to do interviews all day long, and I think it used to be when there was no YouTube, you could probably do an interview, and if you weren't feeling it, you could just be a dick to everybody.
Sure.
Now every single one of these things goes on YouTube, and it isn't like you're sitting down with Barbara Walters. Like, you were sitting down with Schmoes Blow or whatever it is.
Right.
I'm not attacking anybody. I'm just thinking of a silly name. And you don't know their legitimacy. I mean, clearly they're legitimate enough that your managers decided that they should be part of the press kit. And none of these questions, hardly ever are the questions serious, especially when it is, I gotta stop saying schmoes, that's a real thing. When it's like movie dudes, they're not real journalists, and all they want to do is they have video of you, so all they want is to get some kind of reaction out of you.
Right.
So they come in with their silly games, and they want you to like, ooh, do it, say con, or whatever.
Right.
Well, I saw one with Benedict, and he was great. He was very, very game. And he was doing the whole thing, and they wanted him to say a bunch of things, play other people's characters.
Oh,
so they had like flashcards with like famous movie lines, and he was really, he was actually into it. There was actually a couple that I think he legitimately didn't recognize, and so he didn't really like. I don't say he did them, but it wasn't like really great. But they gave him like the the Anakin, like the, oh, the sand, I hate it.
Oh my God.
Gets everywhere. And he's
no.
like, I don't think I'm this good. I don't know what I can do. Let's see. And they gave him, what else? I think the capper was Ralph Wiggum. They had him be like,
my cat's breath smells like cat food.
And he was in.
Sleep. That's where I'm a Viking.
He was in for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
okay.
then they said, like, are you Khan? He's like, no, no, I'm, look, I'm John Harrison. I don't know how many times to tell you.
Right.
So he gets it. The dude gets it.
Yeah, he does.
Swizzle stick, cinder block. He understands.
I don't know why you keep saying his name like that. You're very consistent in how you mispronouncing his name.
Anti-news theme. I'm actually non-consistent. It's different every time. You could say I'm consistent in my inconsistency.
Whatever. Sniff.
Well, let's talk about some trailers. We saw the trailer for Wonder Woman. Any
yes,
thoughts?
Yes, we did.
Available everywhere. Everybody's seen it already.
It looks really good. I don't know. I just don't completely trust DC. And maybe that's not fair of me. I felt like Suicide Squad was better than I thought it was going to be.
You're the only person in the world.
I have hopes for this, but at the same time, I have doubts. I mean, because Batman versus Superman was freaking terrible, and the first Superman with what's his face, like Grumpy Mick Grumperton.
Too late.
No,
we've already got a guy whose name we make fun of.
Well, look, who wants a sulky Superman?
He's a weirdo. Sorry, Wonder Woman. We're going to talk about a guy instead. That's like the reverse Bechdel. He is. Like, read about his life.
Okay.
Google him and Kaylee Cuoco from Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
Yeah. Just read about his life.
Okay.
He's a weirdo.
I'm a little weirded out.
Yep. He's the anti-batch.
Okay.
Well, I hate to do that thing where I let you go first to set you up and then I undercut you, but I'm less excited than I've ever been for this film.
Really?
Yes. It looks like...
Do you think it's all flash and no substance?
Yep. Looks like Woman of Steel to me.
Yeah.
Some of the things that they were promising, which was... Come on, ladies. Haven't we represented you enough? I'm just kidding. Here's what I want to say. I
can't
want it
see
to
my face
be,
right now,
I want it to be something that is empowering, but without having to take like every 5 minutes and go, isn't this empowering?
Or like slow motion kick some guy in the face.
Well,
or something
I mean,
like
I think
that.
At this point we're like beyond, we're post that maybe just having a film like Captain Marvel, I know she's going to stop and almost turn to the camera and go, girls, you can do anything. But what if we just had a movie where like, Mad Max Fury Road, where a woman was just dominantly the
kicking
main character.
Butt.
And, yeah, which, you know, not every hero has to kick butt to win or whatever, but...
No.
You know, and, but I, yeah, forget all that. That doesn't matter. I trust the intentions of Patty Jenkins and whoever's writing it. I can't even remember now. But it's the fact that DC films have to be so freaking literal in their visual storytelling. What happens? Does... A man, a handsome man, crash land on an island filled with women.
Yes.
Then let's see Wonder Woman watch the plane descend from the sky, hit the water, and then crash and go in the water. And she's like, huh. It's like, there are ways to tell a story that don't involve you showing us every single... This isn't taking place in real time.
Yeah.
And then we always thought that, okay, so she's worried about man's world and war and... I don't know if they are warriors. I don't know if war has reached them. Maybe they're worried about war consuming the planet because it's the war to end all wars or what. But now it seems like one of her sisters gets shot.
Which, in a really stupid way.
By a bullet. Which we follow on a bullet cam in bullet time. Which is like, we've moved so far past this already.
Yep.
It just seems... Everything has to be broken down. And then, she's going to protect him in an alley. Okay, that's a cute scene. I remember it from Superman in 1978. Right? So if you're going to steal from the best. Fine. Steal from Richard Donner. Mm-hmm. Except, no, that's not enough. Then five guys come out with guns. And then she's got to beat them up. And she flips upside down. And we see a downward God's eye view. And her leg flips up and flips the guy. And flip. Who cares?
I know.
You just because you and for somebody who's yelling, I probably shouldn't say this, but if you don't have anything to say, saying it louder is not going to make it any better.
No, I agree, and I this film looks. I guess one thing. Okay, so it has to be dark, it has to be gritty, and like the theme is just like, I know it's supposed to get me excited, but I just
I don't think it's going to be that dark or gritty. Do you?
I think because it's DC, they're going to try to make it dark and gritty.
Yeah, but I think that it's not going to be nearly as gritty as you may think. And it's a movie that I think has actually sort of earned its grit because they're really pushing the fact that it is, you know, the war to end all wars, like the most horrible war ever. And the only way that you can push how horrible the war is for us to lose characters we care about. At this point, we've seen all the death and destruction that you can eat. Like, you can't, you know, Watchmen was like, you wiped out New York City.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't show us death and destruction anymore and have us be just cowed and wowed and plowed by that. So instead, you have to show up people that we care about, you know, getting hurt by this.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, I want to go to war. What is her accent? I don't even know what it is.
I don't know. And it's a little confusing. She's the only, I don't know if that we hear any of the other Amazons talk. So I don't know if they all have the same accent.
I'm not really sure either. Connie Nielsen's pretty silent in all those trailers that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know. That being said, I mean, yeah, it looks amazing. I got to give it that.
Visually stunning.
Yeah. But when I know the story and then I see you telling the story, but not in ways that I go, oh, they're telling the story, when you are basically just giving the ABC speak and spell primer, which is not a metaphor of what this story is. You're just playing it out in a dumb show. Like, it's not impressive.
No,
so
it's
maybe
not.
It's just trailer bait. Maybe a lot of that'll go away and they'll find a more creative way to tell the story. I don't know. I doubt it. Next one. Let's do it. Let's talk about T2.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about the original Trainspotting? I mean, it's been 20 years.
I just remember a lot of weird camera
You remember
angles,
A Lust for Life.
And yes. And, young British people talking to each other loudly and
Scottish people
and basically the toilet scene where he
so you don't remember
goes into the toilet.
Well, then give me your completely fresh impressions
or the baby on the ceiling.
Yeah, ceiling,
you know,
baby.
All the hallucinations.
We're all terrified of ceiling baby. Perfect day sequence.
Yes.
Yeah.
This looks like kind of more of the same, but they've moved on, but they haven't. So.
Oh, the characters.
Yeah.
Okay, we've said this before when they announced that there was going to be this film. The biggest suspension of disbelief for me is that these characters are all alive still. How are they?
I agree with you.
How are they all alive?
I completely agree with you because when we last left them, they were all like really, really strung out and getting high, like
except for Diane.
Constantly. Yes.
But that's even, it looks like that's going to be a thing in the film. Like in the trailer, we see Diane, who they did finally get Kelly MacDonald. She's in this thing. And she has like a real life. And of course, they're all still just scraping
losers
to survive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
in various ways.
Right.
And then, I mean, I'm sure, okay, so there's two books, right? Like Trainspotting, and then the second one's called Porno.
Yeah.
But, of course, like you said, can't call a movie that.
Yeah. What about Old Man Porno? Again, that would shoot
gross.
The searchers.
yes, it would. But, so, I don't know, it's probably in the book, but it's like, it's so depressing. It like Ewan McGregor's character is like, you're an addict, so be an addict of something else.
Choose life, choose Facebook, you know, choose Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, right.
But it's like,
So they're repeating themselves. I don't know if the movie will be just a sort of visual update of the original film. That's
right.
Kind of what it looks like.
It is kind of
This trailer
like.
Was definitely designed to have you to evoke, you know, in your mind the original trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he literally at the end of it, you know, almost gets hit by a car and laughs just like in the first one. So
right,
that's what they're trying to do. Although I think that here's the deal. Okay, so we saw a Wonder Woman trailer that showed us a bunch of amazing things that didn't impress me, and then we saw this trailer which showed us a bunch of things, you know, except for Ceiling Baby, that we've kind of already seen. And I really want to see the second film and not the first. And you know why?
Why?
Because I know all those characters.
And you care about them?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm still worried about them.
Yes.
But also, they have amazing adventures.
Right.
That they barely survive.
Or remember.
Exactly. And I kind of want to see how they, you know, made it to this point. How they wended their way through, you know, 20 years.
Yeah. I think that maybe that's one thing that's kind of lacking with a lot of superhero movies is just,
they're all origin stories. We have no,
yes,
by definition, we have no investment in any of those characters.
Yes.
Save it. We're talking about one in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that wasn't too hard. Let's talk about a new TV show on IFC. It's called Stan Against Evil. It's on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. It is the brainchild of Dana Gould, the actor, writer, comedian, raconteur, master of Eagle's Lair. And it stars John C. McGinley as Stan, the former sheriff of Willard's Mill, a New Hampshire town that is famous in its antiquity for witch burnings.
Yeah.
The legend goes that they burned 172 witches there compared to Salem's 20 amateurs. And John C. McGinley has recently retired as a sheriff. He is succeeded by Janet Varney's character, who is a young single mother who is there. She's no nonsense. And I can't remember if we find out exactly where she's from. Boston?
I can't remember.
She's from the big
either.
City, basically.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, city slicker. And so she comes in and she's the new sheriff. And it turns out that Stan's wife has died recently, which makes him very sad. And he learns that she was actually defending him all these years. You see, these 172 witches, their ghosts are mad.
Yep.
And every single sheriff that has ever been sheriff of Willow's Mill
has
met
died.
A horrible, terrible end at the hands of these witches. And Except for Stan, yes. He manages to retire, and he discovers that his wife has been protecting him all these years. Like a middle-aged female Sam and Dean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yeah. Save it. And so now the ghosts are going to move on and take out Evie, is her character's name? Or Edie.
Evie, yes.
Yeah. And
Evie Barrett.
And so she's in danger and her daughter is as well, although she's not going to go quietly. She is a capable character as well. And
yes.
That's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go first. You can undercut me this time. Everybody says, Oh, nice. I like your evil dead. Evil.
Sure.
Not alive.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do?
Okay.
I mean, you got a premise. It's a solid premise.
Yeah.
It's always good to have a number you can count down. This is a terrible start. I mean, I enjoy it. I don't know if I'm biased because I'm a big fan of Dana Gould's and also John C. McGinley's. I'm definitely both of those. I would say so far that it is a little, and I don't know if Gould directed the first episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know.
There was a sneak preview, a Halloween night. They played the first episode, and now I think the first two episodes are available to watch. To me, there's a lot of jokes.
Yes.
It doesn't have quite the timing that you need that I think a good director could really give you. You know,
sure.
In between directing and editing, that's kind of where you make a lot of the humor in TV. You can tell a joke and wait for the audience to laugh or whatever if it's theater or, you know, live in front of a live audience. And there's just some things that like kind of hang and like wait too long. They're not quite as funny as I think the show is hoping they're going to be.
I understand what you're saying.
It also might be kind of stretching for time because this was only about 21 minutes.
I feel like it could have, even if it
and
was
it
a little tighter,
been,
like just even a couple minutes shorter.
It could
shorter.
Have been like an Adult Swim, like probably like 15 minute. Type
yeah,
thing.
It would have been like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, there's a lot of cues that kind of just got held too long.
And I think John C. McGinley is like giving this all he's got. He is swinging for the fences in the good way. And I think
I think Stan is underwritten, though.
You think so?
I think we're supposed to know, because it's John C. McGinley, he's played crabby guys his entire career.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to get that he's playing a little older than I think he actually is, I hope. He's not that old. He's not like retirement age.
I don't think so.
But he's playing it a little older, and he's like Archie Bunker-ish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like racist, but not, you know, aggressively so. He's sexist.
He's not a very open-minded guy.
No, he's a very traditional guy. That's a great way to put it. And so the show tries to lean real hard on that, as it would like with Archie Bunker. But the problem with Archie Bunker is Archie Bunker thinks Meathead is an idiot, and Meathead is an idiot.
Right.
It doesn't mean he deserves to take all the abuse that he gets from Archie. But there's like a side there. And instead, Stan just says these horrible things to all these people. And we're supposed to go as an audience like, ooh. But it does. All the characters just kind of look at him like, what?
Right.
What are you talking about, old man?
Right.
And so he looks kind of like a dupe.
I think that's
like
on purpose.
A dupe or a
yeah,
doof.
Maybe that's kind of undercutting the character, though. A little too much?
Well, because when Ash from Evil Dead, let's just talk about their competition,
yep,
is also surrounded generally by people, especially in his new show, who don't really know what's going on, you know? So he may be an asshole, but he's our asshole. He's mm-hmm. the asshole we need to take out these demons or deadites or whatever we've got.
Right.
And that hasn't happened yet on Stan vs. Evil.
Sure.
I'm not going to give up on this show. I think it's really charming, and I think it has a lot of potential, but it's not going to be what's going on Starz right now.
No, look, but going off of that, I like the Evil Dead films, but...
What do you think of the show?
I didn't like the show.
I didn't like it either, for the same reason. Mm-hmm. I feel like these shows are very similar in how they're being executed. Now, apparently, my friends love Evil Dead, and I'm supposed to go give it another shot, and they've really picked it up, but it had a lot of the same problems, where Ash was just offensive.
And it just wasn't funny
No, it's funny when the joke's on him, not when he is punching down at people. And it wasn't as funny as it thought it was.
Yes.
So it was like lingering on things too much. And so, this has the same problem, but this
not
is
to the same extent.
But I would expect a Sam Raimi, you know, at least produced, probably directed the first episode. Anyway, a Sam Raimi backed Evil Dead show should have more chops than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that this is kind of like a little show that could, which I'm willing to watch develop and grow.
I think it's charming, though. I think this is charming.
Severed tooth, severed thumbs up?
Unlike,
one and a half severed thumbs up.
Stop it. Unlike The Evil Dead, I think this show is charming. And I do feel like it's kind of like a funny supernatural.
Jeez.
So he has a basically adult daughter or grown, you know, but like his wife's sewing room, he's never supposed to go in there. And that's where all of the weapons and all this stuff is. And he had no idea this entire time.
So yeah, ultimately, I would say give it a chance. Check it out. It's not going to hurt. If you don't like it, it's fine. But, you know, check back in, because I think that this show is only going to get better the longer it goes. What about you?
I really enjoyed it. I found it charming and surprising.
Yeah, check it out. It's on Wednesday nights on IFC. Magic. A lot of All right, the moment you've all been waiting for. We're going to talk about Doctor Strange from Marvel Studios. It is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
I did it.
You did it.
Starring in this film as Dr. Stephen Strange, Mr. Dr. Stephen Strange.
Yes.
It also features...
Strange. It is.
Yeah. Well, if you like. Yes. It also features Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One and Choatel Ejiofor as Baron Mordo. They call him Baron, don't they?
I don't think they do. I think they just call him Mordo.
Just Mordo?
I'm pretty sure.
Huh. Okay. I thought that at some point they might have said Baron, which would make me go, well, why is he a Baron? Which I don't think they take the time to really talk about in the film, but that's fine. Why would you?
They don't really do his backstory a whole lot. We just know...
No, we know that he has been fighting evil for a while, and we know that he has done a lot of things that I guess he's not proud of.
But he doesn't elucidate on what those are. So, whatever.
Do you think when they said Benedict on set, two guys turned their heads? I bet they did.
I bet they did.
Benedict Wong plays Wong. He's playing the name game in this movie. His last name is the name of his character.
Yep.
And his first name is the name of the star.
Yep.
Rachel McAdams also appears as a fellow doctor friend of Doctor Strange's.
Yes. Fellow Doctor Strange.
I don't know
friend.
How else to describe her.
Yeah, she's a former lover and doctor friend.
Yeah.
Doctor friend, doctor girlfriend.
Doctor girlfriend.
Yeah.
Let's not start that.
Ookie.
Yeah. And also Benjamin Bratt. Because why not?
Don't forget Mads Mikkelsen.
I was getting to that.
Okay.
Mads Mikkelsen. Yes, Mads Mikkelsen plays Cassilius, a bad guy. Who... a friend and a colleague of mine described as having looked like he put volcanic mascara on. I think that's a pretty good description.
Oh, that's a really good way of good description. But it's
you can't
like
describe,
glittery. It's like glittery purple volcanic.
You can't
volcanic.
Describe why they look like that, but nope. That's a good description of what it looks like.
Yes.
50 words or less. I'm just kidding. or if you can do it.
No.
Oh, you're not even going to try?
I don't think I can do it.
I'll take that challenge.
Origin story.
Well, you got me there.
Sorry.
Hocus Pocus lose your focus. Whoa, hold on. All right. Save it. Successful neurosurgeon loses use of his hands, mm-hmm. searches for magic to fix them, gains abilities beyond mortal men, uses them to fight for good.
Yes.
I mean, that's not an elevator pitch. That's like the first step of an escalator pitch.
Yeah, I know.
That's a stepladder pitch.
There's a lot of steps to that pitch. Exactly.
No, there are no steps.
You don't think so?
No. Like, an elevator pitch is supposed to be concise, but it's supposed to tell you something. And all I'm saying is, like, magic hero! Like, there's like two steps.
Okay, okay.
Unscrew the light bulb.
Gotcha.
It's a very short length of steps.
Gotcha.
Yeah. This is, how do we get into this? You just want to talk about our impressions?
Oh, gosh.
Here's my impression. Penguins.
Sure. We can talk about our impressions. Let's talk about positive stuff. I think it's a really beautiful film. I think they've taken some, we saw it in 3D, and I think that this is a film that they've taken a lot of the magical stuff and made it kind of cool to look at in 3D.
Yeah, it is visually impressive, and there is a long sequence that's reminiscent of, I don't know, like, Across the Universe, or like, you know, like an acid trip or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a scene where, so Dr. Strange, he's a confident, arrogant, you might say, neurosurgeon. He hurts himself in this car wreck, which, are we going to find out that Bucky was driving the other car or something like that? Because it seems so, but you want to have a hero's origin, or at least the steps that start him down the path to being a hero, mean something. And they don't always have to. It could just be nothing. It's like when Ponch and John have to save a bunch of people on Chips. It's just because somebody was shaving instead of watching, they were going on the 405 or something like that. And then they hit a bus full of nuns and that crashes into like the orphanage ambulance or something. And then we've got a pile up and they've got to save everybody. And that's not really anybody's fault, except maybe the guy who wasn't watching where he was going. That's the lesson here. He is working in his car.
Uh-huh.
Which he probably shouldn't be doing. But it's not like somebody warned him about that. There's no morality behind what actually happens to him. It's just an accident. But it also isn't really laid out as an accident, as just a twist of fate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, fate or chance has given him this amazing mind, this amazing ability, and it takes it away just as easily.
Right.
And if you want to say God, you know, gives and takes away, in this case, we'll just say fate. So there isn't anything like that. He just runs off a road,
mm-hmm.
and it destroys his life.
Absolutely.
And the first 15 minutes are like my favorite part of the film because it really begins as this. I kind of wanted to hang out. Okay. So origin story, clearly. Mm-hmm. The first 3 or 4 minutes of Iron Man, well, maybe more than that, like the first 15, not counting the opening ISIS video that Iron Man starts with, is about a guy who has a weapons company and he's really arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. I don't want to watch that movie. Like, I just want him to get shrapnel in his chest so we can move on and he's Iron Man. But, like, I was enjoying the medical movie.
I know.
Which I knew that they had to destroy for us to get to Magic Guy.
Yep.
But, like, I would have liked to hang out there a little bit. And they go back to that a couple times. I think we're going to keep this pretty much spoiler free.
Okay.
I think that's the best way to go. But they do come back to that hospital environment, but never in any way that
really pays off.
Yeah, I don't feel like it does at all. And I also feel like the way that he, except for the concession to the fact that he wants to learn magic, they say, well, how'd you learn medicine? But through study. Well, that's how you're going to learn magic. And
right.
He studies, and he's a good student. And there's actually things in the film that directly come from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a shot of him learning. He learns the ability to project his astral self, which is, you know, one of the Doctor Strange's first things that he does in the comics.
Sure.
And so he does that, and he learns to, he can read books while his body sleeps. And apparently that's a thing. And that's from the,
yeah.
that's from the comics. Like, he does that in the comics as well.
That's so crazy.
But there's never really, like, a thing where he has to, like, I have to, like, surgically use this spell to something. Like, I never feel like he uses, like, the doctor talents that he has.
That's a good point.
And that's one of the
besides
things.
Besides memory.
And I got way off the track because I was talking about, we're talking about the visual appearance of this film. Yeah, it's really impressive, but part of me says, who cares? Because, again, it's like the Wonder Woman thing. I'm not sure I care about any of these characters. And they show you these amazing techniques. Somebody discovered this kaleidoscope thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they've turned that dial to 11. Like, everything is kaleidoscope in this movie. When people cast spells, they just start kaleidoscoping things. And I can't even tell why. Like, there's this part where Caecilius and his what are they called? The acolytes?
I don't know, the zealots.
There you go.
Yes.
They're using dark dimension power. They're doing some ritual to get more powerful. And then he's like, okay, the ritual, it's begun. And then he just starts, like, twisting walls and windows. It's like, are you going to fight somebody? No, you're just going to twist some stuff. Right, he's just twisting stuff.
Well, and it's like, it's weird, too, because I had kind of like an out-of-body experience watching this, because I'm like, Mads Mikkelsen is pretty dang menacing in just about any role he's in. And watching him in Hannibal, it's like, I am watching Hannibal with volcano makeup on, do like little twisty circle things, and he doesn't even seem to really believe, you know, that he's necessarily doing this.
He's very talented. You have to use him very carefully because he does not give a lot.
No.
And so I wouldn't expect the ruthless bad guy to be a gop at what's possible in today's technology of spinning buildings around on themselves. But he is totally blank, and it works. The time it worked the best is when they put him in a Hannibal situation where he's fighting Strange, and Strange throws that like Giger like capture device on him.
Yes.
That like restrains him back, and it's like, oh, I've seen this scene in Hannibal.
Yes.
They've got him tied up and he's not giving anything, and he's like, yeah, I don't care if I'm tied up. Like, I'm going to win. I work for like outer space Satan, so this is going to be fine.
Yeah.
Speaking of outer space Satan, this is what I wanted to get to. So very visually impressive. They go through this LSD sequence that's very cool. Although while I was watching it, I was like, they're just like f***ing us in the eyes right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, this is very cool, and I know we're going to watch this for the next 4 minutes, and I know it's never going to come back or mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that they seed is that he does travel, or his mind does, through the dark dimension. And in the dark dimension, that's where Dormammu lives. Not ruining anything. Everybody knows Dormammu's the bad guy in this film. They do sneak some Ditko balls in there.
Do you want to explain what Ditko balls
are? I have to explain Ditko balls?
I think you do, because I was like, Ditko balls? I was like, you Ditko, just Googled Ditko balls,
Ditko,
didn't you?
Ditko, who, speaking of Ditko's balls, he just turned 89 on Wednesday, so happy birthday to Mr. Ditko. But he's the co-creator, along with Stan Lee, and some would say he has created most of Doctor Strange, and very famously would draw these other worlds that Doctor Strange, you know, travels to. He's always going to other dimensions and things like that. And he would draw these sort of Kandinsky-esque shapes, you know, and colors.
Right.
Because that's what another dimension looks like, I guess.
Sure.
And they would, so there'd be maybe reminiscent of like diagrams of atoms or something like that. And they did manage to sneak that in. Of course, they had to put a million neon fuzzies and like algae type things on them for when Strange actually lands on one. But yeah, the dark dimension has Ditko balls. I've got to give him that. But other than that, yeah, I was a little sad to see Magic House disappear. Of course, the character has to be humbled.
I know.
And I guess that would come to my next big sort of complaint, which is like, this is just, we're on the 14th film of the Marvel Universe now, and this is just Iron Man. This is just Iron Man. Very rich, successful guy, is arrogant. He receives a mortal wound, which he must recover from. In doing so, he develops an amazing power, which he learns to use selflessly to protect people. Like, he's even got a goatee. Like, it's literally Iron Man.
Yeah, I mean, you have a good point. It's Iron Man with magic instead of machinery.
Yeah.
I guess one of my biggest complaints, I mean... Yes, it uses a lot of the similar like tropes and ways of storytelling that we've seen before in superhero movies. I feel like the pacing, I'm not really satisfied with the pacing and overall story.
Well, I want to give them a pass on pacing in terms of spending time or investing time in the first 10-15 minutes of the medical drama when you know that's going to go away.
Right.
I enjoyed it too, but it was definitely lower stakes. And the problem is that, so you know you're going to drop all that once the curtain falls away and it's a whole new world, Jasmine. And that's fine. You expect that jolt. You should have it. I didn't think it happened enough, really. Sure, you got the whole Technicolor thing, but all the things that happened to him after that should really, I think, shock us as viewers. And maybe it's because we're just too smart. After all, this is the 14th Marvel movie. The wonders that he's seeing, to me, are just like, oh, yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
Like, they should have or I wish they could have really pushed the imagination and really came up with some stuff that, like, I like that the Giger thing.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Just, the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, and then he's got like some energy things on handcuffs on his wrist or something like that. They kind of did that when he uses magic, and this is something else I was disappointed in, is that magic is described as drawing on the energy of the universe.
Like, so you can call it spells or not.
Yeah, they let themselves off the hook because the Ancient One explains, some people call it spells, but if you don't like that, don't worry about it. Okay, so I guess they're just mutants and they have mutant powers or something.
Right, so
like,
I guess...
where's the magic?
I guess there is no magic in the Marvel Universe. Is that what you're saying?
There still seems to be no magic in the Marvel Universe. Doctor Strange, yeah. And everybody has their own sort of magic whips and stuff like that, maybe to beat Wonder Woman to the punch.
I guess.
And he makes like a sort of stretchy, silly putty... hand stringy thing that's kind of a crappy weapon, and that's fine. Like, you know, that was kind of cool, but I really wanted to see things that really freaked me out, you know, and blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want the Cloak of Levitation to be like a cute Disney sidekick.
I enjoyed that, but it...
Oh, no, it was really cute.
It was really cute.
But I found myself liking it and being like... Ugh.
And being annoyed at the same time?
I'm annoyed at how much I like this.
I completely get that. You know what it... You know, speaking of Disney sidekick, you know what it reminded me of?
The carpet from Aladdin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got it. Ding, ding, ding. Disney, we know what we're
doing.
I'm
one step ahead of Megan Hanna.
Yeah. Also, I think one of my other big complaints is that Mordo, they did not really develop that character enough.
No, Mordo goes through, I mean, if anybody knows anything, and we're going to talk about it in the next segment, so it's not really spoiling, or don't listen to the next segment. Mordo goes through a lot of changes, and we all know that he has to.
Right.
And none of them work. He becomes, every screenplay goes through drafts, goes through changes, and I think that he was the guy who got lost in the changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go, no, now Strange has to do this. Or maybe he's going to, Christine is his girlfriend's name, or ex-girlfriend. He's got to meet her now and do this. And so the guy whose arc we need to see an arc for Strange. It's another kind of disappointing thing. Like, I never really feel like he learns the lesson.
No.
Because he's a guy who in the beginning is like this hotshot surgeon. He's like, don't tell me what to do. And they're like, you don't know what you're doing. And he gets it because he's so talented. And they're like, all right, I guess you know what you're doing. And he kind of does the same in this. Ancient One gives him this big rap about how he's got to forget everything he ever knew and forget that it's... She says like multiple times, it's not all about you. And he wins, no spoilers, but he wins by acting unilaterally and it's all about him.
But he also chooses...
Well, he...
Without spoiling...
It doesn't... I don't buy it.
Okay.
Yeah, I know what your argument is and I want to preserve the audience, but I don't buy it.
Okay. That's fair, but I do feel like out of all the characters, he has the most of an arc.
I guess. No. Well, here's the thing. Mordo has the arc. He just doesn't have the parts that put the arc together. It's like they drew the curve and then plotted the data. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He goes from where he is to where he is, but in every single scene, he's going in a different direction because he's like, oh, everything's great. And he's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I don't think we can do this. And he's like, oh, no, we got to do this. And I never understand how he gets through all those things.
It's like the bullet points are there, but like...
That's the plot of Dan.
Yeah.
If they... I don't know. If like we had one scene where the Ancient One pulls him aside, she goes, how's Carl doing? What do you mean? He's, I'm worried about him. Like, he's not always that stable. He's just got, we lost a couple of magic guys. Maybe he really knew the librarian really well or something like that.
Right.
And so we get that he's unstable and there's instability there because he is Strange's like big brother through most of the thing. He teaches him all the lessons and then he totally cracks, you know, at the end, and it's unearned.
It's completely unearned. And I think another character that is underdeveloped is Wong. And I understand you want him to be different than in the comics, because in the comics he was his manservant.
Yeah, he doesn't... Well, then just leave him that way. I mean, don't make him like, you know, a stereotypical Asian. Yeah,
yeah.
But if he's undeveloped, then just have him be one-note sidekick. That's fine. The movie's got that.
I guess, but I just don't even feel like they hit that hard enough.
Yeah.
I just...
Yeah, they took him out of that role and didn't give him much else. He's a librarian, so what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then also, I like Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. I feel like overall the casting was done fairly well. but I don't feel like the characters were developed enough.
Yeah, I think they cast a lot of great actors.
Was written that well.
And they just didn't have great characters for them
to play. Yes, I agree.
And not ruining anything, I think everybody knows that time travel is kind of involved in this.
Yep.
As we said last week, when you've hit time travel, you're kind of out of ideas. And once you introduce time travel into the Marvel Universe, then how is there a weight to anything? Oh, no, Thanos destroyed Earth. No, he didn't. Whoop, fine. Yeah. Like, why is there any weight to anything?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, and then...
Doctor Strange in theaters now.
Well, like, okay, you talk about, like, heart or dramatic weight and stuff like that. And
heart was one of the Captain Planet gems. We're talking about the Infinity Stones.
I know, but I'm just thinking of Guardians of the Galaxy, where a talking, walking tree saves his friends, and then his friends
and
decide...
learns a lesson
yes.
In five words.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
We understand. I mean, he doesn't... Well, it's not a long arc. It's a kind of short arc.
Sure.
From Goofy Tree to self-sacrificing you know, Weeping Willow. But we understand it.
Yes. And the stakes are there. And then his friends are like standing up to like one of the biggest bullies in the universe. And they stand together.
Right.
And they're stronger together than they are apart. And...
Strange is only held back by all the idiots around him. That's one of the things that really frustrates me about the film, is that we get that he's really smart. And we could even kind of like, it's like Tony Stark. You hate him because of how smart he is sometimes.
Right.
Because he always wants to rub it in your face. And you're like, ooh, maybe here I can help Tony. No, he doesn't need your help. He's already got it figured out. He built a robot to do that. So you can resent him for that. Strange is very similar in that, okay, so we've taken the master of medicine and scientific medical arts, and we've put him in the world of mystical arts.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand that there's going to be four more of these or whatever. So this is the movie. This is the only time we'll get to see him as somebody figuring it out.
Right.
How do you take... Because even Spider-Man cannot really understand what's going on, but he's sort of in has the mastery of his powers. How do you take a character, the Sorcerer Supreme, and make him compelling as a guy who's like, is this a spell? Is this how a spell works?
Right.
I don't envy the screenwriters the task of that. It's tough. And they solve it by not even really just cutting the knot. You know, they don't. He sucks until he's awesome. He's the best.
Right.
He's the worst guy there. There are like 50 other kids at this magic school, all magicking awesome. The mm-hmm. second the zealots attack and Dormammu is threatening, where the hell are all those guys?
I know,
there should
right?
be a whole army of magic ninjas here to work this out. And mm-hmm. I don't think they ever explain where that goes. And then suddenly Strange he worked really hard. He studied while he slept. Because of that, he's the best.
Right.
That's dumb. That's a Tom Cruise movie. I have a friend who really hates Tom Cruise. I'm kind of indifferent. Not to say that I don't like him. I understand that he is like America's Avatar. I think he's got good movies and bad movies. It really, instead of him, it's based more on the script and the directing.
Sure.
And I don't really worry about him. But he hates Tom Cruise movies, especially early ones. I think he's changed now that he's gotten a little older, where he just solves whatever the problem is.
Yep.
And so I tried to get him to watch A Few Good Men. This is how far back we go as friends.
Wow. Okay.
Long time ago.
Yep.
And I'm like, it's Aaron Sorkin, it's Jack Nicholson, it's Tom Cruise and all these people, it's Kevin Bacon. And he's like, I don't want to watch it. I'm like, why not? It's a great legal drama. And this is before Aaron Sorkin was Aaron Sorkin.
Right.
And he's like, no, because it's so stupid, because he's going to be a hotshot. And then he's got the hot girl there. And he's like, let's have sex on this desk. And then they'll like do it. And they'll find the secret documents on the desk. And then, which is so not what it is. And to give myself one, he did watch it later. And he's like, all right, you're right.
It was
good. Pretty good.
It was actually good, yeah. Despite Tom Cruise. Right.
But you're right. But this just seems like a that to me. Like, this is The Last Samurai. Another movie, Zwick, I think, Edward Zwick, which I like in principle, but it is white guy comes into an Asian world and shows him how to do it.
Yep. And that's what bothers me. I don't like stories.
Doctor Strange in theaters now. Would you recommend this film?
In spite of all of that, I guess I would recommend. I would still recommend seeing it. I would have seen this film.
Oh, people
regardless.
Are going to see this no matter what.
I know, and I do like Benedict Cumberbatch. I like Tilda Swinton. Here's something I'm going to say to you though, and take this as you will. If you want to see Tilda Swinton in a superhero movie, watch Constantine.
Oh boy! Wow.
I think it's better than
that's
this
a bold
film.
Statement.
Yeah.
I would recommend it after everything I said because it's still better than Ant-Man. And let me clarify. Ant-Man is a better movie than this movie, but I think I'd rather watch this movie than Ant-Man because even though the first thing you say or the only thing you say about a film that has problems is, oh, it's a very good looking film. So that's kind of what we're saying. But I'd rather watch this film because I like the milieu. I like the character of Strange. I like the way that they've presented most of this stuff. I think it looks great. There are good scenes, like when she dumps him on Everest, although we know what's going to happen. I mean, he's going to get back, clearly.
That was great. There are great moments.
I like the idea of that as a test. I liked when he first meets her and she's showing him the acupuncture thing. And she's showing him the other thing. And he's like, oh, so there's you've got bullshit and then you've got an MRI. Also, his accent's a little weak. I don't believe in chakras or finding your center and stuff like that. Penguin. I don't believe in penguins. Somehow the parts of the whole come to make something better than what it is. And I think that this is a good start for maybe better Strange movies. I think it's a good addition to the Marvel Universe, though. Because, like I said, this should have been almost unrecognizable as a Marvel film. You could even keep the Iron Man skeleton of a storyline.
Sure.
And then just make it so weird that we don't even see that that's what's happening. Do you know what I mean? But otherwise, except for a floaty cape and the stretchy laser lines instead of
the kaleidoscope,
hammer or something like that. I mean, it's just a superhero movie. And I was hoping for more.
Yeah, I agree. And I was hoping, wondering to see how magic would make its way into the Marvel Universe and was kind of disappointed when kind of backed away from that.
It didn't really, yeah.
Come on, Disney, you're better than this.
Let's stop ending these movies with giant portals above a major city.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I agree.
That's Doctor Strange. Our tentative recommendation, double recommendation. I don't know. I'll see it again. Maybe it'll grow on me.
That's kind of how I feel. And I think you brought up a good point really quick here. I didn't really enjoy the first Captain America film as much. And the last two, loved them. Absolutely freaking love them. And I love Cap
as a character. Better than the first one.
I know they are. So maybe there is hope for further Doctor Strange films. And one of the scenes towards the end, or after the credits or whatever, really enjoyed.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right. So stick around after the film.
Yeah.
Okay. To get your money back. Just kidding. Okay, Comic Book Club, let's get right into this. We did this for a specific reason. It's not Halloween anymore, but, you know, Doctor Strange is kind of spooky. He fights ghosts sometimes.
Well, and we wanted to read some of the original.
All right, we wanted to read Doctor Strange because the movie is coming out. What do you want from me? I know, right? And so we read Marvel Premiere issues 9 through 14. What is significant about these issues? Well, I'll tell you. They feature Doctor Strange.
Yep.
Baron Mordo.
Mm-hmm.
They also feature...
The Ancient One.
The Ancient One, yeah. They feature Shuma-Gorath, who is one of Doctor Strange's longtime sort of major foes, who I kind of felt like maybe they would have put in the movie. Maybe he's not distinct enough, though, because he's just like a big blobby type guy. It also features...
It can show up later.
It also features a reprint of Doctor Strange. They used to do this back in the old days in Marvel. We don't have anything. We'll just literally run an old issue.
Like a clip episode?
Yeah, like a clip show, exactly. So I think it's the third issue, issue 11 of this series, is actually a reprint of Strange Tales 115.
Okay.
With art by Ditko and the words by Stan Lee. Which features the origin of Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange first appeared in Strange Tales 110. And they did this is when they had, it'd be 10 pages of one thing, 10 pages of something else.
Right.
The real solid run on Strange Tales was towards the end of it, a couple years after this, when you had, Stan Lee mostly, but some other writers and Marie Severin and other, I think maybe Gene Colan and other artists doing the Doctor Strange side. Flip it over, you've got Stan Lee and Jim Steranko, and then later just Jim Steranko doing Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And yeah, that's some good stuff. You got to get that if you get the chance. And this kind of is all over the map. I mean, in terms of the story, we could summarize it really fast. Doctor Strange, who at this time, they didn't really believe in like that decompressed storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It is always a cliffhanger every
sure.
single week.
Yeah.
He's always coming back from some other dimension. It's like, oh no, Clea, your head's on fire. And then he takes care of that. And then like, oh no, Shuma Gorath is eating the Sydney Opera House. Oh no.
No.
Yeah. He's got to fly back and forth. And so the problem here is that he, the ancient one, his master.
Yes.
Is in trouble. And he has to go to his aid, and he is very weak, and he is in this like temple in the east somewhere, as you'd expect. And he's worried. Shuma Gorath is on the prowl. They're trying
right.
to keep him from coming, breaking into our universe. And it turns out, oh, sucker, he was inside the Ancient One the entire time.
Yes.
Strange. He struggles over this, but he kills his master.
Yes.
Which is like really dark. But
it's very dark.
Yeah, 72. But it turns out that that was the plan all along. Shuma Gorath, you know, is able to come out of the Ancient One and fight with him, and so they go through that. After that wraps up, we move on to, like I said, the reprint of Doctor Strange's origin. So
yes.
there you get to see Baron Mordo and the Ancient One and Strange's first meeting with them. And even then, like, from 72, from like 63 to 72, you see how storytelling changed.
Yeah.
And it did. It changed a lot. These comics are very 70s. But they change a lot in the way that the characters act, you know, towards each other, the way that they, the storytelling, because it's,
yes.
there's a lot of that, and you can't blame Lee for it. It's just the way comics were back then. But, you know, Mordo's like, I'll cast a spell. And Strange is like, he's casting a spell. And the letterbox is like, he's casting a spell.
Right.
Yeah. Showing, telling, doing, drawing, licking your face. Oh, it's doing everything.
I know. And they did with older comics, and I can appreciate this to an extent. But nowadays, I feel like they just kind of like either you've read them or you haven't. So either you get this reference or you don't.
Sure.
Which to a certain extent, I can appreciate. But there's a lot of, and we've seen this in other comics too, but there's a lot of like little asterisks in like a box, and then like a box where the writer is explaining like, oh, there's scene in issue 32.
Yeah, the
you
little
know?
Editor blurbs. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
True believer.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, okay, I'm not going to look that up right now, but maybe later. Like, I'm just going to continue reading this story.
Right, yeah.
I did think that it was kind of like, it was interesting in the comics how they told his origin story with him like really not wanting to be there, and then like snow starts falling, which is probably the Ancient One doing that.
Possibly.
But he doesn't know that.
But what we get is what we kind of, I felt we lacked in the film, which is, and this gets used, this is another thing that gets used a lot in Marvel movies, where the character is like, they're a dick.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, here's the thing. Strange, you've got Iron Man and Thor put together, because what's Thor's problem?
Hubris.
He's super prideful.
Yeah.
It's a story about hubris.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we just walked out of
Wrath
of Khan.
Khan.
Not a good movie to see before we talk about Doctor Strange. Because Wrath of Khan, there's a lot going on, but one of the things that's going on is that Kirk believes that he can't lose.
Yes.
He doesn't believe that it's possible for him to be in a situation where he has to lose something, and he is proven totally wrong.
Yeah, and that's
and he
strange.
Suffers for it.
Yeah.
And Strange?
Doctor Strange.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
And he suffers for it, and he grows, and he moves on, and he actually gets better, but he's lost something
that he
along the way.
Can never get back.
Exactly.
Except he does.
Well, yeah. Blame Harv Bennett or somebody for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And Strange, you never get that. You don't really get it in Thor either. He loses his powers. He tries to fight the Destroyer anyway, and so I guess Odin goes, oh, dummy, you're worthy now. Here's
yeah.
your hammer back.
I know.
I thought that we would get something like that in Strange. Because, like we said, like he's super arrogant. He loses the the ability to do surgery. He goes to magic school. He's super arrogant there. And that gets him through. So he was right
yeah.
to be arrogant the whole time.
I know. You would think he would actually...
Just don't crush your magic fingers this time, dude.
Yeah. You think
whatever
he would have been
means.
Humble when he showed up, but not
yeah,
really.
I don't... And look, I'm not a screenwriter. I don't know how to have him show that humility. We're not going to spoil the end. I think the end was designed with that in mind. He performs this act at the end
yes.
that kind of represents like a sacrifice for him.
Sure.
But because of the circumstances of the movie, I don't really buy it. It's not really.
The weight.
You can show us something. You can tell us, oh, this is really bad, but it doesn't seem all that bad.
The stakes aren't really there.
So, but let's talk about the comic book. So, written by Steve Englehart. We were talking about it before.
Yes.
And why that lost me. And also drawn by Frank Bruner.
Mm-hmm.
Classic artist from this time. What I really want is I really want your impressions on this, because I think, you know, you're being exposed to this really for the first time. And we could talk about the first sort of arc if you want. You can talk about the Ditko stuff. I'd like your opinion on that. But let's focus mostly on what happens at the end. The final three issues,
mm-hmm.
12, 13, and 14,
sure.
Where Strange finds a book, basically, that belongs to a magician named Cagliostro.
Yes.
Who is referenced in the movie as well, mm-hmm. Doctor Strange movie, who's a very powerful magician. And then another villain comes into play called Sisnig,
mm-hmm.
which should we... And now I'll play it backwards for you. It's just, is Genesis backwards. And this issue was very controversial because because it's basically this sorcerer. This is a great taking of, I think, things that exist already, like ideas, like the idea, like Merlin is a magician that was said to live backwards.
Uh-huh.
So kind of taking that. And he is this magical future wizard, which is like the big twist.
Uh-huh.
And so in his time, you know, I guess people are like magic lifting bro. And like they're even just by the virtue of being from the future, they're like more powerful sorcerers.
Sure.
And he's got this plan where he's going to travel backwards through time. Going to all the areas of great magic and like siphoning it off.
Right.
Which is something that might have appeared in the film that we saw as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also a book, a very famous book that has to do with time travel is in the film we saw as well.
That's
so
true.
Maybe you see where you get some of these ideas from. And he does that. And in doing that, he takes Strange and Mordo are sort of sucked along in his temporal wake.
Yes.
And they find that as they follow him into the past, their magic powers are reduced.
Weaken.
Until they're nearly nothing.
Yes.
And eventually Sisnig reaches, you know, the beginning of time itself, or at least very early Earth where Shuma-Gorath comes from. So we see him there. He gets wiped out immediately by Sisnig, and Sisnig reaches the Big Bang and says like, oh, the whole time they've been, both Mordo and Strange have been arguing about the virtue of humanity, whether they should be preserved or not.
And
I
trying,
think we know which way, you know, both
right.
people would argue. And Sisnig finally says, well, it's now I have enough power and wisdom that I realize it's not for me to say. We're going to give them their own chance. And he's, let there be light. And he creates the universe.
Yes.
And along the way, all these things that he's doing are also recognizable as like he fights this cult in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, which are destroyed by fire.
Yep.
You can see what Englehart is trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And as to ruin it, Doctor Strange is taken back to the future. It's New Year's Eve of 1973. And he realizes, like, so wait a minute. I like when the character is confused as well. He's like, wait a minute. Are we living in, like, a second creation? Like a different universe? Or like a remade universe? Or like, was that the original Big Bang? Is Sisnig God?
Right. Did I experience the creation of the world the first time? Or was it a recreation?
Yeah. And next issue. Like, we don't ever talk about that again.
No.
Guess if whether parents liked this or not.
Probably not.
No. There was a lot. Well, actually, you know what? I'm not sure there were a lot of complaints. But I know editorial said, no. No, we can't do this.
But they did
you guys,
it.
You guys, well, they did it, but you guys have to write like a retraction or something, or an apology.
Oh, really?
And that wasn't for Frank Bruner and Steve Englehart. They wrote a fake letter from a priest in like Arizona or something like that, saying, praising the story, saying like, it's an interesting, you know, look into this and that.
Oh my goodness.
And
into
so,
theology.
So I think Len Wein was the editor-in-chief back then, was like, all right, fine. No problems. So they got away with telling this very kind of transgressive, or at least
controversial.
Quite controversial story. Yeah. What did you think of the 70s Doctor Strange?
It was very 70s, and
he's got that collar.
Yes.
Popped.
Definitely popped. I just can't help but think of the Adventure Brothers character that is based on Doctor Strange.
All right, we're just getting out of the way now.
I know. I just, but he's always spouting spells and stuff like that, which is one thing that was missing from the movie. Not that I always want him to say, like, I always forget how he says it. It's like the something.
The Order of the Triad.
Yes. Yeah. Or the, by the Harry.
Hoary Host of Hoggarth.
Hoary Host of Hoggarth. Yeah, I can't even say it. Hoggarth.
Hoggarth. Hoggle.
I kind of wanted to scream at Strange and Mordo because, I mean, spoilers, right?
That's okay to talk about spoilers. 40-year-old comic book. Sure.
Yes. So the Ancient One is more or less destroyed, but kind of like his mortal self is destroyed, but he kind of exists.
That's something else. Yeah, he becomes kind of one with everything.
Yeah.
And so later on, Strange is in a desert and he picks up a lizard and he's like, "You are the Ancient One as well."
And it's like
he becomes dedicated to the protection of life. He's going to protect all life.
Yes. And so he has become the Sorcerer Supreme and he's going to go tell Baron Mordo because he feels like Baron Mordo should know.
He'll love to hear this.
That the Ancient One has passed away and right. I am carrying the torch. It's a little arrogant of Strange, to say the least.
He doesn't see it that way.
That his mortal enemy is going to be like overjoyed by this, or, you know, it's almost like he's trying to make peace with Baron Mordo by telling him this awful, heartbreaking news, and yet, and it's like Mordo is like, screw you, Strange.
Yeah.
What strikes me is like they both have these catchphrases that they say, and they're very what's the word? They're illusionary. I mean, they all like Strange, like it's
alliterative.
Like, alliterative. Thank you. It starts with the same letter. It's like maybe three words that start with the same.
By the flame of Faltine.
Yes.
By the wand of Watum.
Exactly.
Yes.
And him and Mordo do the same exact thing, and it's like you guys. You're both trained by the Ancient One. You are so alike. You were like cut from the same cloth. Yeah. And yeah. I want to shake them.
Just sit them down in a room.
But they're like,
lock the door. They'll work it out.
Right. But they're like so much alike that they hit heads, you know, but like they're so much alike and yet they're so different because Strange wants to help people and, you know, do things for the greater good. And Mordo's like, screw that. I want more magic for myself.
Yes, he's only ever wanted to be the best at something, which would have been an easy, easy motivation to give IG4 in the film.
Here's
instead, he's like, oh, everything's cool. Oh, no, everything's not cool. What if he was jealous of the power that Strange
suddenly has?
Why is this guy so good? Why is he the chosen one?
Exactly.
You know, like a Matrix sort of thing. Like, that's not really Joey Pants' motivation in the Matrix. But anyway, you've seen it in other things.
Yes. I think that would have made sense. And it would have given his character something more to build on.
Yeah, possibly.
But I overall really enjoyed this. So Wong is in this, but again, he's not really given a lot to do because he's just his manservant. Clea, who I don't know a whole lot about, is in this. One thing I liked is...
I'll tell you something about Clea if you want.
Sure.
Clea is from the Dark Dimension. Mm-hmm. She's Dormammu's niece.
But she doesn't appear to be really evil.
No. She really isn't evil necessarily. We get more into what the Dark Dimension is. It isn't just...
pure evil.
Big-headed Todd and the Monsters, or whatever we get in the film. Dormammu, I think, looks too much like the Human Torch for them to get away with that, the way he's really supposed to be. But she's a character that does struggle with evil impulses.
Sure.
But she is... they're called the Faltine, I think. They're not actually human. She just sort of appears or manifests as human on our plane. And so, I mean, if, you know, the Sorcerer Supreme, he's going to have a magic girlfriend. Is this going to be a girl like this?
Well, but one thing I thought was interesting is he chooses her to be his disciple. So if he were to leave this mortal plane, so to speak, she would be the Sorcerer Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean... it's impressive in a couple of ways, but it's almost like they come into question right away. Like, well, is this because we're a couple? No. You know?
Is this because you're doing me?
Yeah. But I mean, I think it really shows, and I think it's somewhat progressive for the time, too. I mean, I know ladies are doing more things and all this
stuff.
But
take it easy.
I just think it's interesting because it shows, and he really says this to her, like how much he trusts her and how much he believes in her magic abilities and like her basically that struggle with good and evil, choosing the right thing. And I don't know. I think that was just it was really cool to see that. And it was a cool like character moment and everything. I think one thing was strange in the comics is sometimes, even though I like the alliteration stuff, sometimes it's hard to really get into what he's doing because he's saying so much alliterative stuff. It's like, yes, 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 your speech is very pretty.
Yeah.
Let's get to the point, you know?
Yeah. I think that that's a good point that you made about Clea, and it's probably not one that I would have thought of. So thanks for bringing that up.
Sure.
Reading this and also reading other strange stuff, I can see how if you just were trying to take the visual, most important visual elements of Strange, you would have a guy that just flew around and shot lasers.
Sure.
There wouldn't be any magic.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, Englehart talks about this because when he used to write him for the Defenders, he didn't really know anything. He didn't read the old Lee Ditko stuff.
Sure.
And so he didn't really get like what the character was about, and he just said, I wrote him like a guy who was just a superhero that shot lasers.
Sure.
And so it wasn't until he really thought about like, oh, like the magic aspect, black magic, doing some semi-religious storylines and things like that. And that's, I think, back to the film, I think that's what was missing from the film. But I don't think it's necessarily the fault of the creators or writers or visual designers. They know he's a guy that
right.
has laser hands and a flying cloak. So there we go. And also the Eye of the Agamotto.
Yeah.
So, but I wish I had seen a little more summoning specific forces or talking about the forces that he derives power from, like the Vashanti. And then,
right.
I don't know, maybe they don't want... In this day and age, we're not worried about parents' groups and like Satanism scares and stuff like that, aren't
I we? Think that that's always in the back of our heads, but look at how popular Harry Potter is. And there are parents
here's a compliment that I can't believe I'm giving Harry Potter. Guy casts spells.
Yep.
He's got polyjuice potions.
He does. He has a Patronus.
He's Expelliarmus.
Yes.
Things.
There is magic
I don't
in
know
Harry,
a lot
Potter.
Of Harry Potter. And yeah, so I just wanted like adult Harry Potter, I guess.
Sure.
They were talking about this. Any favorite moments? I'll give you one. My favorite moment is when they are in the desert in Mexico for some reason, because Strange is now the Sorcerer Supreme and he just went to chill out.
Yep.
And like Wong and Clea have to track him down, and they're in a Jeep, and he goes, oh, let's go home. And he just teleports everybody away. He's so powerful now.
Yep.
And I was thinking like, so... do they just eat the deposit from the rental agency? Because the Jeep's in the middle of the thing. And then
right.
in the next couple panels, Strange is like, oh, yeah. And he snaps his fingers and summons the Jeep back to the rental agency. I'm like, there you go.
I know.
He is the Sorcerer Supreme.
It was pretty great. And he, like, scares the crap out of the guy
well, yeah,
who works
yeah.
there. Yeah, that was a really good moment.
Sorcerer Supreme's not going to lose his deposit.
No. I thought... you know, I feel like the how they depicted the Ancient One in this had a little bit more weight as well. Even though we only see the Ancient One for such a brief moment in time.
Yeah.
Strange realizing what he has to do. And also the Ancient One realizing what he has to do. Like the
well,
Ancient
yeah,
One.
Well, yeah, the irony is that he thinks he's rescuing the Ancient One. And it turns out that he's the Ancient One knows that if when he dies... the longer he lives, the stronger Shuma Gorath becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So he is trying to kill himself
right.
without like just
by, like,
cutting
starving.
His throat. He's just sort of like meditating and like being an aesthetic to death.
Right. Exactly. And he knows that they get attacked by Shuma Gorath's like some of his subservients. I don't know. They're like evil monkey creatures
yeah, right.
or
yeah.
something. and Strange is in trouble, and like the Ancient One realizes, oh crap, I have to save my student because my student showed up and thought he was helping me, but he really wasn't.
Yeah, if you just butted out, Strange, we would have been fine here.
Yeah,
the plan would have went through.
Exactly. And then he knows that if he uses this one spell, he'll save Strange, but Shuma Gorath will be released.
Right.
And then Strange realizing, oh crap, now I have to kill my master.
Yeah.
And I don't want to kill anybody It's just like, it's...
Because I'm the guardian of life.
Yes.
And immediately has to kill somebody.
Yep.
Nice work. Would you recommend this?
I would. I would definitely recommend it. If you want to learn something more about Doctor Strange, get a little bit more on the background of the characters, I would definitely recommend reading this run. It was... I had never read any Doctor Strange comics before. I mean, I was somewhat familiar with the characters, but I think this gives you a pretty good basic understanding.
Yeah, I would also recommend it, although I think I'd probably recommend the old Strange Tales stuff above this, just because okay. This is more, it's still kind of superhero-y, not to discount Englehart's efforts to change it, but it is very superhero-y, whereas that old Black Magic stuff is just weird. It's just really weird.
And that's kind of what
every week he's doing something. Every week he's doing something that is could change the universe forever. And it's like Dragon Ball, like the way that like they fight the first guy and it's like, oh my God, nothing is ever more powerful than this. And the next guy's like, oh my God. And right. then you get 15 guys down the line and he karate chops the planet in half and it's like, oh my God.
Right.
Everything is like that because he's fighting like Unis, Dormammu's sister, and then the Living Tribunal shows up and he's like, I'm going to fight you. And he's like, I have to fight him. It's like, you can't fight the Living Tribunal. You're an idiot. And then somebody comes who's stronger than him. And it's like, what? So I don't know. Just that's kind of fun. But yeah, I would never tell you to not read an old Steve Englehart comic. Of course. Of course you have to read this. Definitely, definitely, definitely check it out. Well, next time on Comic Book Club, we're going from magic to its sister science. Is that how it goes?
Let's say yes.
Is it like a triangle? Like magic, science, and religion?
That sounds or somewhat
except for
plausible, yes.
People, you know, would you pair like magic and religion together? Is it like faith versus truth?
Yeah. They're all
truth is relative.
Related,
established
somewhat.
Scientific fact.
Sure.
Well, whatever it is, we'll be talking about Black Science next time on the show. Black Science is a comic book by Rick Remender. Remember that guy? Remember that name?
Yeah. Great stuff.
Yes, and his comic book Black Science has been out for a couple years now. I've wanted to talk about it for a while. We're going to talk about the first trade called How to Fall Forever is the subtitle of the trade. It collects the first six issues of the book. It is an intense book. It's been a while since we've talked about Remender, and I'm glad we're talking about this. It's Black Science next time on Comic Book Club. We did it.
Yes, we did.
There was a mad. Is there a Harry Potter spell that makes you go fast?
Probably. I don't know what it is, though.
If you take the time turner.
Mm-hmm.
Hermione's, not Doctor Strange's.
Right.
Doctor Strange has time TiVo, basically. If you take that and you flip it the other way really fast, do you... No, you stay in one place and everybody else goes fast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do you... There's got to be a spell that makes you... do stuff really fast.
I'm going to say yes.
What if you ran around while spinning the time turner?
Oh,
people would
God.
See you go real fast because their frame of reference is different, right?
I guess. I don't know what the spell is to be Flash
is,
in
I
the Harry Potter
is,
universe.
I think this is... Well, that's what I'm asking. That's
I
what
know.
I want to know. This is, what I think, where it falls down is because Harry Potter has zero logic at all. Harry Potter don't care. Harry Potter don't give a shit.
No.
And so it just... does it and deal with it. And Marvel movies are very funny, very well thought out, but I think they're so logical, especially in terms of like storytelling and how A leads to B leads to C. Even if you don't know what the B is, you're going to find out later in a
right.
twist, that they're uncomfortable. They can't countenance magic and things that don't make any sense
mm-hmm.
in their storytelling.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely
and
right about that.
That's what I really wanted from the Doctor Strange movie.
You wanted something really strange. Like really, well, really strange
and it's
and
our
weird.
Only option because I feel like Captain Marvel is going to be fairly straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. She's going to be
Black Panther
a war
will,
hero.
Black Panther will contain elements of mysticism, but he is a
political
perfect fusion.
Leader.
Yeah, but he's also a science hero as well.
Yes.
So he's a fusion of those two. And I think they're not going to want to hit the mystic stuff too hard because
probably
they don't want to
be offensive
or insensitive.
Yeah.
So this was our only shot.
Yep.
I wonder how audiences are going to react overall to the Ancient One. I didn't find it
I don't think anybody's going to care.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
And I don't, I mean, look, Marvel made a diversity hire in the right direction, because what are you going to do? Are you going to, you could cast James Hong to play the Ancient One.
Right.
In a role that I think a lot of people, the role itself felt was a stereotype. Like, yes. Oh, I have ancient Chinese secret, right?
Right.
So they went, let's not do that. I would say redeem that character, maybe. Just go ahead and cast an Asian actor, because we need those.
Right.
Or an Asian woman actor. But you need a star.
Right.
And you need an eccentric star, too, as well, I guess. So they got Tilda Swinton, who, you know, is great and we love, but she's Celtic. I know that. Just because you said that she's, oh, I guess she's not, like, American white or British white, so... That wasn't enough.
It wasn't necessary to put that in there, don't think.
And we never did come up with a joke for 12 years of Penguin. This movie reunites two actors from 12 Years a Slave. And maybe there's no joke to make. So with that, I guess we'll move on and let you go for the night. We're going to let you know, though, about our social media outlets, which you can find at Facebook and Twitter. And if you look for us on iTunes, guess what? We're there. Get your sling ring. Do this. See what I'm doing with my hand?
Yes, I do.
And open that portal. Head to iTunes and search for Just Enough Trope. You can find our show page. While you're there, subscribe. Please review us. And also, give us a rating. When you give us a rating... It helps us out immensely. We move up in the ranks and people get to find us more. We get to bring more stuff to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all good in the neighborhood. So while you're there, give us 5 Ditko balls.
Perfect.
Ditko balls.
Yes.
I just want to say it again.
Ditko balls?
I don't know if it's... I don't know what people call them. I just call them Ditko balls.
I love that you Googled Ditko balls.
Well, guess what I found?
Ditko balls.
Yeah, you don't want to know. It's kind of like... Googling that other thing we said before. So don't Google dingo balls. Give us 5 dingo balls. Actually, forget the confusion. Just give us 5 stars. We would so appreciate it. Please join us on our next show when we're going to talk about a very special film, Dungeons and Dragons. Actually, you can probably skip that one. It is 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's up to you if you are brave enough to enter this dungeon, sir. But we will see you if you do arrive then. Signing off till then. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan
Keep Hanna. The geek fires burning.